Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari.
Jai Vishnupad Paramahamsa Padrikacharya Ashtotirtha Sri Srimad His Divine Grace Shri Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Vishnupad Paramahamsa Padrikacharya Ashtotirtha Sri Srimad His Divine Grace Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Kuntara Chimit Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhaktavinda Ki Jai. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to the assembled devotees. All glory to Sri Guru in Gauranga. Narayanam namaskritya Narang chaiva narottamam Devim sarasvatim vyasam Tato jai mudiriyet. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, we should offer our respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadev, the author, and unto Srila Prabhupada, the translator, and commentator, and our spiritual master. Nastaprayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatyuttama Shloke Bhaktim Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering devotional service unto the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is destroyed almost to nil, and loving devotion to the Supreme Lord who is glorified in the best of songs is established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I beg your indulgence for 1 second while this thing becomes active. Okay. On this second day of June 2007, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras. Is it text 34? He read two verses yesterday. All right, well, we'll chant 33. I'll read the translation, then I'll chant 34 myself. Is that okay? Okay. All right, give me help here. Artha, Indriya Artha, Abhidhyanam, Sarvarta, Apangvana, I'm sorry, Apannava, Ninam, Vrankshita, Jnana, Vijnanat, Yena, Avishati, Mukyatam, Artendriyata Vidhyanam, Sarvata Pahnavo Ninam, Vrankshito Jnana Vijnanad, Yena Vishati Mukyatam, Artendriyata Vidhyanam, Sarvata Pahnavo Ninam,
brankshito jnana vijnanad yena vishati mukyatam artendriyata vijnanam sarvata patnavonunam brankshito jnana vijnanad yena vishati mukyatam Atindiyata vidhyanam Sarvata panavoninam Brankshito jnana vijnanad Yena vishati mukyatam Atindiyata vijnanam Atendriyata vidhyanam Sarvata patnavornanam Vanksito jnana vijnanat Inavishati mukyatam Patnavornanam Brankshito jnana vijnana Ladies? Artendriyata vijnanam Sarvata pannavoninam Yena vishati mukyatam Arta, riches, Indriya Arta, for the satisfaction of the senses. Abhidhyanam, constantly thinking of. Sarva Arta, four kinds of achievements. Apannavaha, destructive. Nrinam, of human society. Brankshitaha, being devoid of. Jnana, knowledge. Vijnanat, devotional service. Yena, by all this. Avishati, enters. Mukyatam, immovable life. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification, brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. So text 34. Maharaj spoke on that one yesterday. Nakuryat karhichit sangam tamas tivram titirshuhu dharmata kama mokshanam yadatyanta vgatakam. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. Purport. The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily. But such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, but prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, or all our activities should ultimately be aimed at liberation. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat, or milk because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge in the Shastras, and if we live a regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will be able to go forward to liberation. Can someone get this incense for me? It's a little... Thanks. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chukshurun Milatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, at first glance, this is a little surprising, what Sanat Kumara is saying here, because he says one should not do anything that obstructs one's progression in the four goals of human life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Now, in different ways, those are really condemned in our philosophy. Really, we're interested in the fifth goal of life, which is prema. Dharma, Prabhupada often translates as religiosity. Not religion, but religiosity. There's a difference. Religion, true religion, Sanatana Dharma, is, of course, Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. But religiosity often indicates religious principles for the purpose only of getting material wealth. In other words, dharma for artha. Artha means many things, but it means, in this case, money. Economic development. So we see that that's often the case today, that there are so many religions, but people go to church for material purposes because they're in trouble for they don't have enough money or they're sick or whatever. And whereas Krishna does give these reasons as an initial stage by which one can come to him, one has to quickly transcend those and purify his motivations for religion, unless one, or else one will be subject to kaitava dharma, cheating religion. This is kicked out at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. So why should we worry about doing things that impede our progression in dharma, artha, kama, moksha? Because artha is accumulated for the purpose of kama, for sense gratification. And ultimately, when one gets disgusted, he wants moksha. Moksha being, in this case, liberation without devotion. In other words, impersonal liberation. So dharma, artha, kama, moksha, in this sense, is really not going to get us anywhere. And we are aiming as devotees, as students of Srila Prabhupada and the whole parampara, for the fifth goal, which is prema. Prema is panchama purushartha, the fifth goal of human life. And indeed, it is said to be prema pumarta mahan, the great goal of human life, in the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, but to reconcile this, because Sanatana Goswami Swami is saying that one should not act in a hedonistic way in the modes of ignorance, because that will impede one's progress in these four goals of life. So there is another understanding of these, and this is given nicely in the second chapter of First Canto. When you study, we made this into a nice book called the Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. Prabhupada gave more lectures in terms of Bhagavatam on these verses than any other verses. beginning with Savai Pungsung Paro Dharma, text 6 of chapter 2. This is the answer to the questions, first set of questions by the sages at Naimisharanya. What is that process? What is that dharma by which the soul can be completely satisfied? So in this and in these verses, if you carefully study them, you'll see that he deals with dharma and artha and kama, and ultimately at the end of the series with moksha or liberation. But it's the transcendental Krishna conscious understanding of these. So let's go through and we'll see. This is the actual understanding of what Sanatana Goswami is saying here. So the first point is that dharma by which the soul can be truly satisfied is that which engenders pure devotion to Krishna. Dharma, in the broadest sense, means a way or a process of regulation, sometimes translated as religion, but it's really a set of activities and a set of goals which will take you to a certain goal. So people who don't understand what real dharma is, they get bewildered into all kinds of kaitava dharmas, cheating religions, coup dharmas, things that look like real religion but aren't. Because although they have an element of God, there may be a book, there may be practices, the motive and the understanding is saturated with the modes of nature. And therefore, people are misled. This is one of the main characteristics of this age, is that people are misled by cheating yogis and teachers who don't know themselves, and it's the blind leading the blind. So here he's giving this critical answer, Savai Pungsung Paro Dharma Yato Bhakti Arhokshaje, that real dharma, the supreme dharma, pure dharma, is that which engenders or gives rise to devotional service to Arhokshaja. Now it's interesting that he uses this word. As Prabhupada would often say, every word, every syllable in Bhagavatam is significant. And Prabhupada, in our Dharma book, we glean, you know, various passages from different lectures that Prabhupada gave on these verses. And he explains at one point this word, Arhokshaja, and it's very significant. So Arhokshaja is a word meaning Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that emphasizes the fact that he's beyond the purview of material senses. You break this word into three units, Adha, Aksha, and Ja. So Akshaja means born of the eyes, or in general, born of the senses. What is born of the senses? Knowledge, a certain kind of knowledge. In other words, that direct perception knowledge, pratyaksha, not that same kind of word. The ascending process, scientific means. So that knowledge of God, or knowledge of transcendence, of knowledge of anything that is born of the senses, is by nature limited, because the senses are limited and the mind is limited. Even if you have a powerful telescope, it's still just seeing with the eye. You've simply expanded it, but it's still based on the imperfect senses. So what does the adha mean? It means down, pushing down. So Krishna, or God, pushes down or defeats that knowledge which is born of the senses. In other words, he's transcendental. He's beyond the purview of the senses. So in order to take up this dharma, one needs faith. Faith is something that you have that motivates action when you don't have complete knowledge. You have faith in something that's beyond your ability to see, but for various reasons you act anyway on that. So there has to be some faith, and that's of course engendered by association with pure devotees, by hearing, and then one can act. But the character of this bhakti has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. Now unmotivated doesn't mean there's no motivation, it means there's no material motivation. Prabhupada explains that clearly. We have a motivation. If we don't have a motivation, we won't act. We won't get up in the morning. We won't take that next step wherever we're going. There has to be some motive. The question is, what is the motive? And the motive needs to be simply the pleasure of the Lord. That is called ahoitiki bhakti. And this word keeps coming up right in the Shikshastaka. I don't want wealth. I don't want beautiful women, whatever. I simply want your devotional service, unmotivated devotional service, ahoitiki bhakti, birth after birth. And uninterrupted. We may perform this unmotivated devotional service for some time, but then we stop and we revert back to our motivated service, namely service of the senses. You see? So coming to fully satisfy the self, one has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted. So this is the meaning of the dharma. That which impedes that is hedonistic activities. This is what Sanat Kumar is saying here. Now, what about artha? So he goes on to explain that this kind of service makes you detached automatically. Because this is the key. We are imprisoned, we are tied up, we are bound up by our attachments. So detachment, called vairagya, it's not the same as tyaga. Vairagya means detachment. Even in the midst of the objects of the senses, one can be detached from them. And that by the power of devotional service. Whereas the impersonalists can't do that. They don't have the higher taste. So they have to practice tyaga. Now we practice tyaga to a little degree, right? Tyaga means literally giving up. That's the thing where you go to the forest. I don't want to see anything. I don't want to hear anything. You know, let me practice severe austerities and burn out these attachments. That's not our way. We don't practice severe austerities. Our austerities are minimal compared to like these yogis. Even the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita is inconceivable. Go alone to a forest somewhere, sit down on a certain seat for days on end. You know, we associate. Association is the key. But still, why don't we have to perform so much tyaga? Because if we're practicing properly, we'll get vairagya. Vairagya means detachment. So much money can come if you're truly practicing yukta vairagya, then all of it goes out to Krishna. And it's great devotional service. Whereas the impersonalists, they can't do that. They have to literally separate themselves. So then comes artha. What happens when you practice this dharma and artha comes? Every Tuesday we're reading this cumulative scores from the week. So much artha is coming here, you know. So the idea, he says, dharma is not meant. This is the second dharma. First, he says, you can test to see if you're practicing real dharma by whether you're becoming attracted to hear about Krishna. If you're not, then it's shrama evahi kevalam. Then your dharma is kaitava dharma. It's simply dharma for artha. But if it's dharma for Krishna, then you become more and more interested in hearing about Krishna. And that becomes the theme here. How hearing about Krishna, the hearing and chanting, becomes our means of moksha eventually. Not impersonal liberation, but mukti pade, as in that one verse where it means liberation, it's lotus feet of Krishna. So, then he describes artha. Dharma se yapavargasya, nato tai opakalpade. Dharma is meant for ultimate apavarga. Here's your liberation. Apavarga is explained nicely. You know, there's so many nice ways in which we can remember the philosophy. The one is, here is by means of the Sanskrit dictionary. Apavarga, varga can mean a letter. So you have something called the pavargas, right? The pavargas are the labials. And why is it called the pavargas? Because the first one is the P. So the pavargas are those ones that just be pronounced with the lips. So you have pa, pa, this is the aspirated P, ba, ba, and ma. You have five letters, right? All of them produced with the lips, or the pa vargas. That's what they're called. So what happens, so each one stands for a different problem in this material world. The first is parishrama. Parishrama means working very, very hard. And we can see outside, Prabhupada refers to this materialistic society where people are working very, very hard to make money to enjoy their senses. Or more likely to pay off the enjoyment that they had. So many people are in debt now. Hardly anyone can buy anything. They're just simply trying to keep their head above water, right? Trillions and trillions of dollars in debt, you know. So, but they still have to work hard. So then parishrama, and then painila. Painila refers to foam. So you work so hard, like a horse. A horse is working hard. He runs, you know, and he foams at the mouth. So you're working so hard, you're foaming at the mouth. In other words, you're overworking. And you're simply becoming like a mule, like an ass, or like a horse. And then, with all of this, now, there's two meanings to the B word. Next one is B. And one is, of course, bandha. One remains, becomes completely bound up by your attachments to the things that you're buying with all the money you're earning from working so hard. People become totally wrapped up in things. You know, we talk about the different rasas, but so many people, their main rasas was their things. Their house, their car, their insurance, their whatever they have. This is their main bondage. And another meaning of that is bhyartata, Prabhupada describes, it means like a useless activity, I think. So then, of course, after all of this comes bhaya. Now, bhaya is fear, of course. Prabhupada is abhaya, charanadavinda, fearless at the lotus feet of Krishna. So we should know those words, bhaya and abhaya. So bhaya, fear, is caused by several things. One is afraid for his own person, or he's afraid that the things that he's attached to are going to be taken from him. Or he's just afraid of the unknown, right? As you get older, if you're completely a materialist, the unknown, the future, you know, what does the future hold? I know it's disease and death, but then what? You know? So bhaya is caused by, as explained in the 11th canto, by absorption in the material world. Because it's an unsteady platform. All right? Everything is being destroyed by time. Kalik kaliyatamaham. Krishna says, of regulators I have time. Kalos miloka kshayakut pavidho. Time I am, I have come to destroy everything. So there has to be bhaya. And finally, mrityu. M is mrityu, death. So that's these five things that have to be there for the materialist in one degree or another. But this is upavarga. So upavarga means liberation from all those things. So dharma is meant for this liberation. Not otaya bhakavati, it's not meant for accumulating wealth. So this is where the wealth comes in. And if wealth does come, then nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labha yahismata. Furthermore, one who is engaged in ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So what should gain should be used for? Ratiyatra. You know? Serving the deities, printing books, everything that we can do to spread Krishna consciousness. Then it becomes perfect. That's called yukta vairagya. Detachment in yoga. Much more pleasing to Krishna than just giving it up. You know? He's much more pleased with those who stay in the society, work hard, accumulate wealth, and spend it for him so that others can become Krishna conscious. That was Prabhupada's model. So then we come to kama, and there's this very strong verse, kama sinindriya pritir, labha jivita yavata, that kama, or the material desires, are not meant for sense gratification. The word indriya priti literally translates as sense gratification. One should live as simply as possible. Labha jivita yavata. Then where do we direct our desires? What do we want? Jivasya tattva jigyasa. One should be inquisitive. That is a desire, to want to know and to experience directly tattva, the truth, the absolute truth. Nothing else should be the goal. Narto yascheya karmabhi, of one's works. So now he's going through, and of course the ultimate tattva, the goal of all of this, is Bhagavan, Vedanti tattva viras tattva mjagyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavanati shabdite. That this tattva is spoken of by those who know the tattva viras as the ultimate knowledge or consciousness, non-dual consciousness, which is in three phases, Brahma, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So this should be where our main focus should be in terms of our own personal desire, should be in understanding Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And as we learn more about Bhagavan, who includes the other two, we understand that he also has his own desires. In other words, he's a person. And our understanding of him should be in terms of what is spoken of at the beginning about dharma, that is bhakti, a gradual development of that devotional, loving devotional spirit. And then we have unlimited desires for satisfying Krishna. Krishna is unlimited. He has unlimited desires. So he desires that every single jiva is saved, you know, from the torments of the material energy. We know if we read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we'll find this wonderful passage in the Antilila where Lord Chaitanya is speaking with Haridas Thakur, and he's feeling morose, Lord Chaitanya is, because he's wondering, how am I going to save all of these living entities? He's Krishna. But he feels empathy and sympathy for his parts and parcels. But parts and parcels sounds very, you know, kind of dry. These are his people. You know, these are we are all living entities, and we're part of Krishna. And he has this unbreakable feeling of love and protection for us, friendship, which we are not reciprocating. Because we're not, we're suffering like anything. So he wonders, how are they going to be saved? And Prabhupada, in those purports, are very important. Haridas Thakur is encouraging Lord Chaitanya. He says, don't worry, You know, when you were chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in the Jharkhand forest, though that echo was actually the undeveloped living entities, like the trees responding in your, you know, to your kirtan. So just by your coming here and chanting, everyone is being liberated. And then the universe becomes populated more, you know, again, by the undeveloped living entities like that. But in the purport, Prabhupada makes this very important point that one who is a sincere devotee will try to work to alleviate the anxiety of Lord Chaitanya. And that anxiety is transmitted through the parampara. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisananda Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada, all sincere devotees, they are following just in the mood of Prahlad. They themselves are with Krishna. There can be really no anxiety. Live or die, today or tomorrow, the same thing goes on. But the anxiety is there for those fools and rascals who are trying to enjoy this world and being victimized by cheating religionists and leaders and cheating books. You know, so much knowledge. It's information overload, you know, and being sent astray in their only genuine activity, which should be reestablishing relationship with Krishna. And so the great acharyas, they work hard to reestablish real dharma, real artha, real kama, and real moksha. And that is what Srila Prabhupada did. So Sanat Kumara's teachings here, the Prithu, are really very important, and especially because of Prabhupada's purports here. He deals with so many things. Here he's analyzing the present day hedonistic society. What kind of society is this? And it's not just America. The American, quote, values have gone all over the world now, whether it's India, China, every country is trying to make money, accumulate money, exploit the earth, and somehow emulate or imitate what we have here, you know. But what do we have here? Do we have a population that is truly happy, that is satisfied, that is peaceful? People are in such anxiety in America. It's been spoken of, you know, what's the solution? A pharmacological solution. You know, take a pill to wake up, take a pill to go to sleep, take a pill to become strong enough to enjoy with the opposite sex. You know, take a pill to, you know, become sane, you know. Everything is a pill. Everything is the easy way, right? I don't want to work. I don't want to really analyze what is the real root of the problem. I simply want a quick and easy solution. This is the essence of hedonism. Hedonism means instant gratification, whether it's relief from pain or ginning up your pleasure energy, whatever it may be. It has to be instant. This is exactly animal life. The more that you become concerned with instant gratification, the more animalistic you are. Animals just run by instinct. You know, they don't have a memory. You know, what they did 2 weeks ago? What should I do? There's no shoulds in animal life. Should is a moral or ethical understanding of rather than what I want to do, what should I do? You see, there's a tension there. And what should I do on what criteria? Most people, you know, what should I do in order to progress materially in life so later on I'll really enjoy? You know, that's a false should. What should I do for my ultimate benefit and for the ultimate benefit of humanity? That's the question. Krishna says that prana arta diya vacha sheya acharam, as it go, I forget. That human life means that with one's life air, with one's wealth, with one's intelligence, one's words, one works for the benefit of others. Shreya acharanam sada. This word shreya is key. You know, they're all shreyas and prayas. So we have to distinguish between that. Real dharma is not geared toward prayas or immediate gratification or even postponed gratification. It's not material gratification. It's not geared toward that at all. It's geared toward the interests of the soul. Sanat Kumar has been speaking now about how the soul kills himself. Destruction of the soul is atma pavanam atmanaha. Means that it's like spiritual suicide. To just surrender to hedonism, the spur of the moment. This word impetuous came up a few days ago. The senses are so impetuous, right? In the second chapter, Krishna talks about. So what is that impetuous? It means that the senses themselves have no discrimination. They have no reasoning power. They want. They're attracted. It's built in, just like a magnet. It's built in to be attracted to iron. Right? You put it nearby, it's going to be attracted. It's not going to, you know, worry about it. So the senses that we get, as we're all embodied beings, they're built in to be attracted to certain sense objects. And as you go through life, they may change, but the basic attraction is there. So their impetus is coming. When the senses are in charge, when they're dominant, in other words, you're a slave of the senses, then your intelligence has been subordinated. Everything is upside down. Krishna describes in the third chapter, the end of the third chapter. Indriyani padanyah indriyabak parang manaha manasastu badhabuddha yobadhebada tastu sa. That the sense objects become the masters of the senses. In other words, you know, the average consumer person, you know, the living entity who's become only a consumer. So something comes in front of the senses, right? The TV. Oh, I like it. Right? There's something there. And then, oh, okay. So then the next time the opportunity comes, you buy it. Right? Then you experience it. So the sense objects are really controlling you. Right? And whoever controls that image and that advertisement, they are controlling you. You're like a zombie. Right? So the sense objects become dominate the senses, which controls the mind. Intelligence is also subordinate, figuring out how to pay for it. And then the soul is just riding along on this chariot, being victimized. So this is hedonism. The more instantaneous your gratification is, the more animalistic you are, and the more you pave your way toward great suffering. You know, you become a stone or a tree, or, you know, it's horrible. You know, we have to read these things, third canto, fifth canto. What happens to, you know, even if you're just, you know, supporting your family, you know, very nicely, but, you know, you're acting, you're cheating on your taxes, you're doing something illegal, that's all it is. Sinful. And you suffer like anything. There has to be that transcendental purpose in our activities. That's what the Dharma Artha Kama Moksha is all about. So Prabhupada is condemning, as he always does, as the Srimad Bhagavatam does, with no, you know, mincing any words, such a so-called civilization. So on the one side, we see that the civilization is becoming more and more degraded. But on the other side, there is also the spread of Krishna consciousness, book distribution, the efforts of Vaishnavas, Srila Prabhupada's movement, in order to counteract the countervailing force against this tide of hedonistic mentality. And that is the battle that we're in. You know, we are like soldiers on a battlefield. We have an internal battle as well as an external battle. The more that we can be successful with the internal battle in controlling the senses, the mind, fixing them on Krishna, becoming spiritually potent, the more that we'll be able to insert or inject this knowledge into those who are receptive. And there's always receptive people out there. There are many innocent people who are confused, who are suffering, know they're suffering, looking for answers. You know, because what happens is that the dream of hedonism is like, you know, they have in economy, they have this bubble. You know, there's like a stock bubble during the 90s. Now there's a real estate bubble, you know. So that can be a metaphor for all sense gratification. It's like a bubble where there's this great hope that you're going to enjoy. And you're very confident. And, you know, I got it all together, you know. And then at a certain point, there's a crash. And, you know, your house is foreclosed. You're on the street. You have this mountain of debt, you know. So there's all kinds of bubbles. You know, the living a life of sense gratification is also a bubble. You're young, you're healthy, who cares about the future, you know? But gradually, over time, this causes great suffering, even in this lifetime. Everyone can see, if you're loose and, you know, you're uncontrolled in your youth, then as you get to be middle-aged and older, you suffer like anything because you've destroyed your health. You know, sometimes it doesn't have to take very long. So drugs are a perfect example of hedonistic activity. Forget tomorrow. Forget 2 hours from now. I just want to, you know, enjoy this, have this peak experience. And then 2 hours comes, tomorrow comes, and, you know, you've destroyed your body, then you have to live with it. It's yours. And you become victimized by these senses that you've, you know, whipped to beyond their limits. So all that sense gratification is like that. It's a drug. Whether it's an actual drug or it's just ordinary sense gratification, it's an addicting, knowledge-covering substance or experience. This is explained very clearly in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So the alternative is given nicely here by Sanat Kumara. And this is something we should remember in our, you know, the teachings of Bhagavatam, that there's some really heavy statements here. Sometimes it overwhelms us about how strict the Bhagavatam can be. You know, it's kind of, whoa, I can't meet that criteria. But the Bhagavatam always gives the whole program. It's not just austerity and renunciation. But as we'll see in a few verses, and as we saw in previous verses, there is a great spiritual pleasure to be enjoyed. When one actually knows the goal, and one practices nicely, then the soul starts to experience Krishna. And Krishna is the reservoir of pleasure. How many of those pamphlets have we handed out in all languages? 10 million? He's the reservoir of pleasure. And he's always with you. He's in your heart. So we always have that reservoir of pleasure. So how do we access that reservoir of pleasure, transcendental pleasure? By the process of bhakti. And as soon as you start doing it, then that pleasure overwhelms your attraction for sense gratification. That's the only way to do it. That's why the impersonalist can never stop it. And we'll hear Sanat Kumara give this critical verse near the end of his instructions here. Yat pada pongata palasa palasa bhaktya karmashayam gudita mudgudda yanti santa. He's saying that the devotees, the santas or saints, they experience this vilas, this is transcendental pleasure, from serving the lotus toenails of Krishna. Yat pada pongata palasa vilasa bhaktya. And by that pleasure, karmashayam, the hopes for material and desires for material activity, which are like knots, gratitam udgratayanti. They're untied or cut. You see? And only the bhaktas can do that. It's not that they're performing severe austerities, they're not out in the middle of the forest or whatever. They're just doing what they should, supposed to do, according to Shastra, according to Guru, according to Sadhu, to develop that taste. And they become liberated naturally. And that's a tremendous boon, to be liberated from this addiction, these ropes, this box, this cage of desires for sense gratification, which we've cultivated for millions of births. It just dissolves. It just is cut by Krishna. This is the great blessing. This is the first installment. And then the real pleasure of the soul, where the soul is actually nourished. Here it says the soul destroys himself. This word, apanabam, means the soul is destroyed. Of course, the soul can be destroyed, but he can be gone into darkness for lifetimes. You know, lower species of life. That's akin to being destroyed. So, but he becomes alive. He's nourished. Very nice verse in the 11th canto. Prabhupada quote it all the time. Bhakti padeshanu bhavova raktir anyat chaisha chika eka kala papadya manasya yatashantaksu tushti pushti chatapayo anugasam. So this is tushti and pushti. The word tushti comes up right in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Where it says, machitta makatapana bodhiyantak parasparam katayantastamam nidun tushyanti chadamanti chad tushyanti. So this is spiritual pleasure. So here the yogendras are telling Maharaj Nimi in another encounter between the king and the great sages, similar encounter, that practicing devotional service is like sitting down to a nice feast of prasadam. After a long fast, the Sringa's appearance, right? That's the dusk, right? So you experience, fasting or Janmashtami. So at that point, you know, then everyone comes, right? Nobody is lagging back. Everyone shows up for prasad on those days. And so he describes that for one who is surrendered and is truly practicing devotional service, bhakti pareshanubhava virakta anyatra cha. Prabhupada would always quote the first line plus one word. Three things happen practically simultaneously. One is bhakti. And here bhakti means not the practice of sadhana bhakti, but actual loving devotional service. The feeling, you know, the experience of loving ecstasy in relation to... So that's bhakti. And pareshanubhava means direct experience of God. Direct revelation. And viraktir anyatacha, detachment from everything else. Three things. So when you sit down, it's tushti, pushti, and chudapayo. Anugasam. With every bite, one experiences tushti, great pleasure. I know the feast has been prepared by skilled cooks with great love and devotion offered to Krishna. And he has this prasadam, the nice pakoras and the sabji and the puris and the rice and everything. Trishti, who can deny it? Spiritual pleasure. And at the same time, you're being nourished. You're getting your strength back. You want to have another big kirtan, right? And you're detached from everything else, right? Nothing else is interesting to you at that point. And also, even the hunger becomes satisfied as you go on. So that's that comes naturally with progress in devotional service, but it has to be engaged in properly. Otherwise, if we swing back from bhakti to kama, bhakti kama, you know, we allow the senses to again control us, and then our progress will be slow. Two steps forward, one step back. One step forward, two steps back, and we may not make so much progress in that way. So this is what this verse is about. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, they all have their place in our sadhana. And as explained ultimately in this section, atak pumbi dvida shresta varnashrama vibhagataha sundasadasya dharma sangsiddhi haritoshanam. That dharma, artha, kama, moksha, which could be integrated into varnashrama according to one's place in society, ultimately must be for satisfying hari. Otherwise, it's Shrama Evi Kevalam. So on that note, we have maybe time for one or two questions or comments. Thank you for your attention. Savas G. Prabhu. Do we have a mic? What happened to the mic? We have. Stay there, Prima Sankar. Stay there, Prima Sankar.
Thank you for a wonderful class, Dravida Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
I was so inspired by this class. It made me think deeply about things, and in the sense that, it helped me understand more, or reminded me how Srila Prabhupada used to say that, all other religions are cheating religions, in the sense that, even Christianity, for that matter, there's a cheating religion because they entice the individual to involve in those things.
Yes,
they don't discourage it; they encourage it.
They have this philosophy now, that if you are very, very wealthy and you can ostentatiously show your wealth, then you've got the blessings of the Lord.
Blessings of the Lord, yes, exactly. That's exactly what's happened in society today. And they never speak about it. Well, they do encourage you to work hard, but they want you to work hard to gain wealth so that you can give it to them for their sense gratification.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible. So, you really invoked or inspired within me this understanding a little bit deeper that realistically in the material world it is a cheating place. And in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam we have Daksha, and he was encouraging the Haryashvas, his sons, to perform great austerity, but the purpose of that austerity was so that they could produce progeny,
right?
To have sense gratification,
right?
To have thousands and thousands of progeny. And it was amazing how he was so determined that, he wanted to perform severe austerities. They actually just lived on air.
Right.
That's how they lived. They were so austere. So I was thinking that in society today, same thing goes on. Mothers and fathers are raising their children and sending them to the slaughterhouses that Prabhupada has so nicely told us of these universities, colleges, because what is the purpose of those arenas? To perform severe austerity, to go out and become an expert sense gratifier.
Yeah, yeah. And the parents have to perform severe austerity because the college costs so much.
Yeah, and right? They perform severe austerity.
As soon as you have a baby, you have to start thinking, oh my God, how am I going to get $120,000 to pay for his education?
Yeah. And we're so fixated on that, so driven, so guided by all these actually demons.
Yeah.
And we can see even within our own Krishna consciousness movement is bewildering. It's even confusing for us.
Yeah.
We become bewildered by these issues also. We don't quite understand it ourselves. But realistically, when we allow our children or whatever to associate with these types of understandings, we see what the result is.
Yeah.
They've become completely convinced about sense gratification. And really they think, I'm a devotee. I don't have to chant Hare Krishna. I don't have to follow the principles. I just, I'm religious.
Yeah.
I believe in religiosity.
There's a book upstairs. I haven't read it in the shop called Upasampradayas. But I think it's by Suhotra Maharaj, blessed soul, he passed away recently. He was very smart. You know, he really was very intelligent. And we should remember that even in Lord Chaitanya's movement, so many offshoots came that were materially contaminated.
Yeah.
You know, they look like they're devotees. They may be chanting Hare Krishna. They may be sounding really nice. I remember the owls and the bowls. I remember the bowls of the great singers. They were so good that they got invited to sing in Carnegie Hall some years ago, many years ago. You know, it's like a performance. You know, Prabhupada said we shouldn't practice the kirtan as some material performance. You know,
yeah.
But they don't practice any regular principles. A lot of them don't even want to read any books. You know, this is of our own religion, what to speak of, other religions. The tendency is, because of the strong senses, is that you bring whatever you have in the service of your senses. This is why we need, control. We have to, this is what the whole point of discipleship is agreeing to be, to come under the instruction of the Shastra and the Guru and the Sadhus. Otherwise, the senses will run riot. Even Dharma will be brought into the service of.
And that was the end point of the Haryasas. They ran into Narada Muni.
Right, exactly.
A self-realized soul who gave them real knowledge. And from that austerity, they just said, forget it. I'm not going to do this.
Yeah, by these strong words, he strong cut their attachment, and they became enlightened and went off.
Strong words. Yeah. So sometimes we need strong words as you gave us today. Thank you.
Sadhu. Cuts. I'm not the sadhu. I'm just quoting Prabhupada. Archita has a comment. Arivo. Thank you.
Not to say that Savasarupa was wrong, but just for some balance on the Christianity issue, because we know we're living in a mostly Christian country. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, first of all, has enjoined us not to bash other religions, because they're different men in different modes of nature, and they're being brought along at different speeds. But one thing that we can learn from the Christians, and this is what Christianity was founded on, was great faith. You mentioned faith in the beginning of your class. In the beginning, they were a minority, real minority, and they were persecuted like anything. And they had such strong faith that they would rather die than give up following Jesus. So we can learn from that. Are we willing to die to follow Srila Prabhupada, to follow the path of Krishna consciousness? This is what the Christians brought to the table, and that's why they spread. Because people started thinking, wow, these people must have something. They're willing to be thrown to the lions rather than rescind Christianity.
Yeah.
So we can learn from that. We should have such firm faith that the early Christians especially did.
Yeah, we always separate the practice of Christianity from the principles. I mean, Lord Prabhupada said, Christ is our spiritual master. I remember reading just in that, I guess we have to end, but there is a book, they have so many saints, and they have this book where practically every day you can read about some saint who achieved, what do they say, achieved his perfection on this day. It means that he was martyred. And some of these saints are incredible. They by their austerity and prayer, they'd be constantly praying to Jesus, they would develop mystic powers. I remember there was one who they were burning. He didn't burn. They're burning at the stake. He did not burn. I think it may be a woman. Because they also had, later on, they had so much persecution of the Christians, And so you're right. They have this tremendous faith in Jesus, and he was austere to the max. He was certainly condemning exactly this hedonistic perversion of religion, and that's why he was a reformer. He was a revolutionary, actually. So, but the tendency is just like in any religion, and this is what Krishna says: by the force of time, it becomes covered. I have to come back and reestablish the principles as it is. So we see even in our own history now, which is 40 years or a little more, that individuals or even whole branches can become deviated due to, not strictly avoiding association in the worst sense with the modes of nature or deviant philosophy or deviant ideas. And so sticking very close to, Prabhupada's words and what he has given us in his example and what he wanted for us is really our only shelter. Otherwise, it could become very confusing. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Hari Bhava.
Hare Krishna, Babu, Haribo, Jai Jai Jai.
Sorry, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, but that's okay. I wanted to question about the farms, like what the Krishna consciousness is doing about the farms, like what?
You mean our own farms?
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, we've had some, attempts